Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Doctor's Orders. I am Dr. Baker, the owner of the only business hospital in the world where we service 14 countries. And if you've been listening to the show, today is Wednesday, which means that it's Worldwide Wednesday. So obviously, we're going to talk about realities that we can then take advantage of that may be global in nature or take an international scope to our businesses, even here domestically. I have a great guest today. Mike Gerken from the Custom Group will be here to talk about his work and the work that he and his family have done for decades here domestically and overseas. So I'm really excited for him to share a portion of his journey with you today to make you a better business owner. Once again, if you want to join our dialogue or if you want online treatment or on-air treatment, you can call in at 859-291-2255. Once again, our call-in number is 859-291-2255. And you can write us directly at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that's info@drbaker.us. Now, any of you business owners out there that's been doing work at any time, you obviously have felt just the overall ramifications of the pandemic. One, we've talked about the pandemic ad nauseum as a country, but now you've started to feel essentially the rumblings or the earthquakes of supply chain issues. You've dealt with inflation. You've looked at how the world has responded to certain crises, such as the war in, you know, with Russia versus Ukraine. And if you are in the commodities business, if you are a retailer, you would have felt any one of these realities directly to your business. So the days of not paying attention to what goes on internationally essentially are over. You know, if you listen to our Tech Tuesdays and you talk about our behavior and our relationship with technology, you would know that technology has made our world smaller, which allows us to interact in ways that we couldn't back in earlier days. And so because of that, we have to be mindful of all things that are going around us. Any one of these elements or realities can cause our business to flutter and or fail. And so my job is to ensure that your businesses are healthy and that we're making really good decisions as to the long-term benefit and ramifications of our businesses and to know what's actually coming down the pipe that affects us. So I want to make sure that we're smarter as business owners, that we're more aware as business owners, and that we're more proactive. It's one thing to have a vision. It's another thing to be proactive in making sure that your vision comes to fruition. And that vision has to include aspects and elements of our world today and what's to come tomorrow. So if you're a business owner, you have to pay attention to our connectivity to one another, the substitutes and the complements of each business. But you also have to pay attention to things that are happening globally. You know, we talked last Wednesday about opportunities that exist in areas such as South America. You know, we've had David Drake here from Una Aberlim and Spartan Group to talk about the opportunities in Brazil. But we also had Renan Delgado from BMA come on and talk about just some of the lower barriers to entry when it comes to doing work overseas. So let's say, for an example, you're in a saturated market here in the States. If you had an open mind to reach out to some of these other areas, and you can do that easily through groups such as the Global Chamber. We had Larry Hart on from the Global Chamber talking about the facilitation of networking overseas. But if you have an open mind to think about what you can do in other regions of the world, you might have the opportunity to leverage a product, leverage a service in a way that maybe you didn't consider beforehand. And this is just another distribution channel and another method of delivery of your product and service that you could then use in order to benefit your company. So it behooves you to pay attention to different signals, different trends, and just overall what's going on in the world to see how it can directly benefit you. Well, without further ado, I want to bring in Mike Gerken of Custom Group. Mike, how are you doing today? Thanks so much for joining us.
Doing fantastic, Dr. Baker. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. And so I'm really excited for the audience to learn more about you and your work. I know that when I first heard about the work that you did, I was unusually interested because for me, looking at how different businesses transition and morph over time is just very fascinating to me. There's so much to learn, especially in family-owned businesses. and how, you know, you transition from one reality to the next. So if you don't mind, just kind of give our listeners an understanding of, number one, what you do for your company and some background about your company so that we can then understand what it is that you guys do.
Excellent. That's easier said than done. We're in a very unique industry. Custom Group was started back in 1989 by my father, who retired end of last year. So I've kind of taken over as the president and CEO of Custom Group. We're actually comprised of two different companies, Custom Blending and Custom Services. Both companies kind of do the same thing, but just in two different technologies. Custom Blending is all oil-based. Custom Services is all energy curable. And what we manufacture are basically the coatings and things for packaging, for anything graphic arts that uses packaging of sorts or labeling of sorts.
Which I find that to be very interesting, although other people might say, you find coatings and blendings of packaging interesting? And the answer is yes. And one of the reasons is because no one thinks about all of the different mechanisms that go into creating the things that we use every single day. You know, some people will just get something from Amazon and they never think about the packaging. They never think about the adhesives. They don't think about, you know, who supplies what products in order to make all of the retail work. And in many ways, your company operates as one of those not really what you would call sexy or trendy companies, but you're very needed nevertheless. Give us some examples of where just a common person might see what your product and service would actually relate to and how that matters to our everyday life.
All right. A lot of the things that you buy because of word of mouth or habit forming, just that's what you buy. What we like to talk to a lot of our brand owners is, you know, you go into a retail store of any kind, and why do you buy that? Well, shelf appeal. Is it sparkly? Is it glittery? Does it make you reach out to buy it, even if it's a 90-year-old person down to a 6-year-old? So we've got coatings that go on everything from food packaging to liquor packaging all over the world.
Well, you know, I talk about that regularly, and actually we laugh about it. We don't just talk about it, at how just what you just mentioned and how important it is for the aesthetics of a product. You know, you could take, and I remember looking at this, I'm not a soda drinker at all, but I remember seeing ads saying, same great taste, new packaging. And the new packaging itself draws people in to make the purchase. Now, part of that is advertising, part of that is marketing, but what you're talking about is the actual execution that allows the marketing department to have something to market. It is what separates products from each other, and it allows people to engage in, and essentially build up brand loyalty, but it's not a part of the product that most business owners think about when they think about creating a product themselves. And so in that case, talk to us a little bit about the journey itself. You know, it started with your father, and obviously a domestically owned company here in the United States, more closely in the Midwest. But talk to us a little bit about how that process was started, and then how did you guys transition overseas to do work there? And then let's look at just kind of what that journey looks like to give an idea to some of the other business owners and those that are listening today.
All right. Yeah, like I said, in 89, my father started the company. We had a lot of great Midwest connections. And as we slowly expanded and grew the company further and further across the U.S., you know, technology changes. When we first started, DVDs, CDs, those were the big things out there, and that was the high-end packaging. Those things have all gone away for most countries. There's still some other areas out there in the world that DVDs and CDs are still big things, maps, textbooks. You know, everybody's now using e-readers and things, even in the classroom. So that's how our technology's kind of morphed from strictly into those types of packaging to packaging that you see on a daily basis. And as we grew the... I'm sorry, excuse me.
No, go ahead. You said something that I thought was fascinating. You know, you said most of the world has transitioned from things that we call antiquated, but yet and still our common belief is that the rest of the world hasn't caught up because they're considered third world or just simply foreign, and foreign to us carries a negative connotation many times. But what you're explaining is that, no, the rest of the world has certainly moved forward with technology, which changes what business looks like, and therefore that gave you additional opportunity. Is that right?
That is correct, but we also still want to service the third world type nations. So that's what kind of drove us, partially what drove us into getting into the international space, was how are these companies that are closing down in the U.S. and shipping everything overseas, how can we still do what we do and grow with that? So that's kind of what one of the reasons that we looked at getting outside of the borders and outside of our comfort zone, which it's a big getting outside of your comfort zone to make that leap into the international space.
Well, you talk about, you know, some of these laggards. You know, you've got early adopters, which are the people that jump on board first, and they essentially pioneer and become an ambassador for new products, services, technologies, innovation, if you will. But then you have the laggards that are slow to adopt, and sometimes you're slow to adapt based on skepticism, but sometimes based on availability of resources. And what you're explaining is that there was still a large opportunity internationally because of laggards, because maybe they weren't developed as fast, but in a sense, it's almost like you're futuristic to them because you know where they're going to morph to, which makes you more prepared than they are to continue to offer products and services. Is that right?
That is correct. We always joke that, you know, as technology keeps changing, there's always going to be a need for a buggy whip. It may not be a great need, but there's always going to be that need, and we're going to offer that buggy whip to whoever needs it, but we're also going to offer the newer technology and the more up-to-date printing processes.
Well, let's look at when you say you got out of your comfort zone and you all had to make the jump. You know, when I think about the jump, I use this analogy in so many different ways. Don't know if you ever saw the Dark Knight movies, essentially the trilogy of Batman before these recent Batmans just came out. But the last one had Bane in there, and, you know, he broke Batman's back and threw him into a prison that had no gates or any walls. Batman could literally leave anytime he wanted, but in order to leave, he had to jump over this well, and the well had no ending in sight. And the rumor, or the old tale, is that there was a child that was born in that prison, and that child made it out of that prison, and no one else could. But when you saw the depiction of it, every person that tried to get out of that prison put a rope on. And when they went to make the jump, they wore the rope as their safety net in the event they didn't make the jump. Well, there was some old timers in that prison. One was blind and one was just simply really, really old. And Batman asked the old timer, said, "Man, how did the child get out of here? I mean, I'm Batman, for heaven's sake. I can't jump out of here. How did the child do it?" And the old timer said, "Well, the child didn't have a rope." You know, the child's mentality was, "I'm just going to jump regardless. And if I die, I die. But if I don't, I'm in the promised land." And so when you talk about, you know, comfort zone and jumping, it can be really scary to business owners just even operate their businesses every day. And that's at all levels. And when we talk about small businesses, we're talking, you know, $50 million and under, 500 employees or less. So that's mom and pop, that's startup founders, that's micro and boutique business owners. But the reason why I'm saying this is that every time you go into a new market, every time you launch a new product, every time you're dealing with a new entrant or competition, all of that has to do with some level of a jump, and you got to take the rope off, and you have to feel confident in your business model and what you have. And so you all were able to make that jump. Talk to us a little bit about when you went to make the jump. What were some of the first international opportunities that you all either sought or presented themselves as an opportunity?
All right. First ones were kind of small, testing the waters with, you know, Central and South America, Mexico, into even some of the Caribbean islands that do some printing. So we kind of went very slow and very traditional, just to, like I said, get over that hurdle of how do you do a international paperwork and how do you go through the channels of getting things through customs and whatnot. And then we started getting approached by some of our larger international customers that said, "Hey, look, we buy this product in the U.S. we want to have this product available worldwide, globally, for all of our branches, to where we're all using the same thing. And a lot of the larger brand owners, the Cokes or the Anheuser-Busches of the world, you know, you've got to spec that in. You have to use the same product globally. So we sat down and said, all right, we've tested the waters. We kind of got a little bit of a learning curve out of the way. We're getting pushed to get into this bigger arena, and we're going to ride the coattails of some of these larger accounts. You know, you just had to take the faith and take the leap. And that's what we did. And, you know, that really pushed us into Europe and a little bit into Asia.
Now, going back to decision-making, was South America, Latin America, was that attractive based on geographical location or lower barriers to entry, need? What drove essentially the decision-making process to engage there first?
It was a need, and in our perspective, it was a lower risk. If something did go wrong and we had to have material returned, it wasn't going to be a huge expense on the company.
Mm-hmm. And so in doing that, you obviously had to forecast it, and you had to have some level of understanding of what you would have had to do in order to participate there. Were you guys close to those assumptions, or were you way off in hindsight?
We were pretty close. We did a lot of due diligence before we even tested the waters. You know, with my father being old school that he is, we had to really push and present good data for him to even allow us to go in that direction. And in hindsight, it's one of the best things we've ever done.
Well, you know, I find that to be, once again, very interesting for this reality. You just stated that, man, this is one of the best things we've ever done, while someone else is thinking, why would I do anything overseas? Well, one of the reasons is that business isn't confined to an area. It's only confined based on either your thinking and or your resources. But a lot of times what I've seen in my experience is that the resources that you have available to you are also based on your level of thinking. So if you never consider other markets or the markets or emerging markets and industries, then you never build out the infrastructure in order to do so. You guys were patient, and it sounds like you were very deliberate in your intent to expand, and therefore you all took the appropriate steps to say, we believe that if we participate here, it's going to give us a yield of X or Y or Z, and that X, Y, or Z has everything to do with, you know, monetary gain plus expenses plus just your overall presence and what that would mean for the company. But at some level, you all had to go through a process that allows you to do it, only for you, once again, hindsight being 2020, to say that this is the best thing that you've ever done. And I really want the listeners to hear that, because if you're afraid of what the international market may bring for you, my job in this instance, or at least on this show, is to tell you that you might want to reconsider if you have the appropriate product and or service. And since you all have been working overseas here, Mike, tell us, you know, what's been the best, I would say, area for you, because you expanded into Europe, you expanded into Asia. Which one of these regions essentially has been what you would say either a surprise or just worked out so well that you couldn't imagine doing business in that area?
Europe has definitely been the best for us. And the reason being, I don't even remember what year it was. I'm going to guess probably about 2010, 2012, the European Union put REACH into place, which is some regulations on what you can send in and out of the European Union. So with us already having a manufacturing site, which is not ours, it's a leased manufacturing site, it gave us the ability to not have to go through all those regulations, because we had boots on the ground and we could manufacture on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that really gave us a leg up on all of our competitors that were shipping everything from the U.S. to the European Union countries.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about that even as much as we currently are experiencing supply chain issues. I imagine that understanding the regulations, building out a network over there and in some of these other countries, that has to help you when it comes to dealing with supply chain, making adjustments or pivoting, avoiding crisis. Have you been able to experience any of those benefits since working internationally?
Absolutely. Some of the relationships and things of that nature, space, especially with Asia-Pacific area, it's a relationship-based world in their eyes. You make one trip over, and you're now their best customer, even if you're the smallest customer they have. They're going to treat you better than anybody else because you made that attempt to come over and visit and audit their facility and see what they do and how they do it. There's different cultures out there. You know, the Europeans are a little bit different. The Asians are a little bit different. But that's another thing that I would strongly suggest, you know, before you get into that international market, to know the background of where you're going and what you need to do and how you need to do it and how you need to approach it so that you don't step on toes and lose that possible relationship.
Well, you know, that's always been a unique balancing act for me, is that when you're looking at international business, you're also looking at cultures and how those cultures do business. In your own personal opinion, you know, obviously based on your experience, your expertise, and just your intellect, how do they view us culturally? And is there a teeter-totter between bending to other cultures or them bending to our culture? Or is there some type of happy medium?
It's definitely a teeter-totter, in my opinion. There's some places that just 100% refuse to do anything with the U.S. There's other ones that you give a little, they'll give a little, and you can meet in a happy median. But I have definitely seen that teeter-totter effect.
You know, and in that case, you know, has it been essentially, you know, and I just have this imagery, a really cartoonish imagery, forgive me for my childishness, but, you know, just the red light versus the blue light, and it's kind of powering over one another. Does it feel like that power struggle, or is it more like a dance?
It's more like a dance. If you go into it with a power struggle type mentality, I don't think anybody's going to be a true winner.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go into it more as a partnership than as a dance, I think eventually you may not get the waltz down the first day, but as you learn each other and you learn the steps together, you can definitely grow to that end result that you're looking for.
How much of that is, and you, once again, your experience, you guys have done really good work for a long time. How much of that mimics what goes on here in the U.S. when you're looking to convert a new client, if you're working for a merger, or if there's some type of partnership you're looking to solidify? How much of that mimics our work here, or do you think it's dramatically different?
I think it mimics it for the most part. But you are going to find some definite variances out there. You know, the other thing, the language barrier sometimes is a difficult thing to get around. But yeah, for the most part, I think it pretty much mimics the same as bringing on a new client in the U.S.
Well, you know, when you talk language, I think that's actually really funny. One of the reasons why I'm laughing, you know, pretty much internally is that language, the interpretation of language, can be so vast. And we know that that's an obvious reality from country to country, but heck, I find that to be a difficult thing here in the U.S., where words don't mean the same thing to certain people, and you think one thing's going to happen, they think something else is going to happen, and all of a sudden the deal doesn't go through based on language. Well, I'm certain that not only are you dealing with that just from a business reality, but also from a language reality. I know that, you know, I do work overseas, and we bring our interpreters where we need to. And there's times that I'm saying, well, did they mean this or did they mean that? And how often does that become a problem, or has that never been a problem for you all?
And it has definitely been an issue with us. You know, we've definitely had some interpreters that are better than other interpreters, and they can kind of explain what the intent behind the people are. And then there's other interpreters where they're just like, this is what he said. And it's like, did he mean A or did he mean B? this is, I could really insult somebody here. So how do we move forward? So yes, we've definitely run into that issue.
Well, you know, as you're talking about those things, and I know for myself, I would like to think that everything that I've encountered internationally has been more of a pro than a con. Although everything has its positives and negatives, even here domestically, that's our reality. But I would say that the pros have always outweighed the cons. And my experiences with the business hospital, our work over in the Philippines, our work in Singapore, South America, it's always been significantly better. I would imagine that that reality is the same for you, but I'd like for you to speak to that. Is it more in line of it's about equal, but because we've expanded and because we've got good business coming out of there, we kind of deal with it? Or is it significantly better to the positive side than it is the negative side? And so, therefore, you're far more grateful and appreciative of your expansion overseas.
That varies with region. In my experience, you know, we've got great business and great relationships now in Europe and the European Union. Not so much in Asia and the Asia Pacific area. It's so difficult to judge that, but I think a lot of that also has to do with the language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And the culture, you know, and especially with COVID and the pandemic and the lack of being able to travel, the time differences. I mean, I think, like I said, Europe, we definitely have a better business relationship with everything than we do over in Asia or even Central and South America.
Is that based on that there's a lot of similarities between what's going on in Europe and the U.S.? And then when I'm saying we're saying Europe, we're talking about some of those English-speaking countries maybe, but is that one of the reasons or is there another contributing factor?
I believe that's a big part of it. Some of these other countries, it's difficult to do, from my experience and my opinion, it's difficult to do business because of some of the laws and regulations. China, for example, with it being a communistic country, it's difficult for us to do business on some aspects with them needing regulation. And you know, some of them want, give me your formula. It's, well, no, that's our formula. I can't divulge that to you. Same with like South Korea. They're another one where they've got some different laws that make it difficult to do business. And if you can't work through that language barrier of discussing why, it makes it hard to do business.
Well, I think in that case, I mean, you hit some things that I just ran into just recently as we've had where we're in some talks right now over in Thailand and over in Singapore. But I've got some technology that they're interested in. And I tell you, it's always kind of nerve wracking to me when I'm thinking about our source code, when I'm thinking about essentially what made our technology, and how do you protect your intellectual property, but simultaneously say, we trust you as a partner. You know, your behavior is going to say, I don't trust you, but you're saying with your words that you do. And then on their end, they're saying that, yes, we've got plans for you, but simultaneously you can't confirm or protect what those plans may look like. And so when we were talking about a dance earlier, there is some work to be done in that dance, and you have to be patient. I don't know about your experiences, but I know on our side, conversations take longer sometimes, depending on how large the scope and the project is. But what I found is that if they take longer, they come with a bigger reward. If it's something that's not, I would say, IP in nature, then it could be shorter. What does your sales cycle look like typically in comparison to here when you're doing work anywhere else?
It's definitely a longer cycle. I would say almost double than what it is in the U.S. But I would definitely agree with you that if you take the time to manage that properly, the reward at the end is definitely greater. And we've seen that pretty much all over.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so in that case, you know, you're saying, all right, well, we're prepared for that. Now you need to know what you're going to gain from it. One thing that I talk to business owners about regularly is distinguishing between direction and distraction. And when you're a newer entrepreneur or a newer business owner, startup founder, everything might look like direction to you. And so you look at everything and you hope everything works. When you're more seasoned or tenured, you recognize that some things aren't necessarily in your wheelhouse or they're going to pull you away from the ultimate goal. So therefore, they serve as a distraction. When you're looking at things overseas, it's really smart to know, what am I seeking to gain? What are my resources? How much am I giving up in order to participate? And how am I going to either utilize the relationship or what does it mean in the event that we convert? When you all are looking at doing business there, and just I'm looking for a philosophy here more than anything, not specifics, but is it more about the relationships you can build, what gives you more saturation, or is it more about turning revenue in certain areas? I mean, what is some of the strategy from a philosophical standpoint that attracts you to some of these overseas markets?
Yeah, the one thing I keep telling our guys is don't reinvent custom group. You know, we've got our core. We're high-end. We're specialty products. You know, just because you've got that shiny opportunity that's going to be big volume, but it gets us out of what we're doing, we really need to research that. I know it looks like a great opportunity on the outside, and like you said, when we were a new company and looking at these things, especially trying to get my father to go international, it was more of a distraction. But when we proved it and proved it time and time again, you know, it became a direction. So that's what we keep looking at. It's like you really have to take things slow and make sure it's beneficial for both parties. And like I said, we see that all the time, and I keep trying to beat it through my guys' heads that we're not going to go do this. This just doesn't fit who we are and the direction that we're going. But it's a good opportunity. What else is it going to bring with it? Do we get anything else, or is it just us running our equipment to death to make a penny? That's not who we are. You know, we're not a not-for-profit. We're going to continue down the path that we've got, staying within the lane that we've set. You know, yeah, we can change lanes here and there, but it's got to be a proven, or we've got to find a way to make sure that it's the direction that we're going, not the distraction that you talked about.
Well, you know, in those instances, it's, you know, when you talk about having really good internal controls, you have a really good foundation, your leadership is sound, all of those elements allow you to continue down the path of what you would need for long-term sustainability. I would make the declaration that whatever your primary or unique selling proposition is in the States, you want it to be that overseas. However, and this is slightly piggybacking off the statements you made earlier regarding just regulation, government, on and on, is that sometimes you might have to alter what you do in order to participate in another place. How many times have you seen yourself having to alter your operation at any level to say, you know what, we're going to work this area here for this specific reason? It's a part of our long-term goal, but we might have to make some alterations just to interact. Has that happened to you guys at all?
Oftentimes, yes. Between how we manufacture products here in the States, there's some regulatory issues in certain areas of Europe, certain areas of Asia that won't allow that type of manufacturing process. So we've got to manipulate on the fly and try to figure out another way to do it. Same thing with some of the raw materials. Raw materials that are okay here in the U.S. are not okay to be used in Europe and vice versa. So, yes, we're constantly having to look at what we need to do to make this product fit in that specific region.
And I would say that you're doing that without losing the identity of who you are. I mean, I liken it to a really good football team where your quarterback, you know, is the primary, you know, person on your offense and ultimately the primary person on your team. So how you're calling the offensive plays and how you're calling your defensive plays all hinges around what type of quarterback you have. And so you put that offense in and you say, hey, we're a balanced offense with a pro form and we like to run the football, but we'll throw it deep occasionally. Well, that quarterback goes down. You may have to alter that game plan some, but you want to stay as close to the identity of your team as possible. And essentially that's what I hear you saying as it relates to, we might have to do things a little bit differently from South America to Europe, but nevertheless, this is who we are as custom group, and this is how we behave, and this is how we want to be known. Is that accurate?
That is 100% accurate, yes. Reputation in my world is everything, and we're going to fight that reputation, and our reputation is a solid quality, high-end product. I don't care where we're at. We're going to continue to do that.
And, you know, doing that, and I would say in some of those areas, how much of a benefit has it been? And I don't know how many, if you have brick and mortars in a lot of these areas or if everything you're doing is just remote, but understanding the land, having the relationships with the supply chains there, I would have to imagine that that makes it significantly easier or better to perform your duties and to provide that higher level quality as opposed to looking to service everything with all of your contacts here. Is that fair?
That is 100% fair, yes.
You know, yeah. Talk a little bit about, you know, what that does for you to have that type of integration from country to country.
Well, it's like you said, we don't have brick and mortar per se anywhere but here in the U.S. What we do, for example, in Europe, because of the regulations for employees, is we've set up joint venture manufacturing sites. So we've got contracts with these guys that we basically lease the building, the equipment, the employees, the sales staff, the technical staff. They're not on our books. We're able to lease them to allow us to use what they have. Asia is a totally different story. Again, Central and South America are a little bit different. So the laws on that is tough to navigate sometimes as well.
Which I'm sure it is. And I want to talk a little bit about that in a moment and share a few things. We have to take a break for a station break. But today's segment, Worldwide Wednesday, is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. Once again, that's Pro Elite. Pro Elite, all one word, training can be found in your Google and Play stores. Download it today. It is a freemium model, meaning that you get hundreds of drills with NBA players, NFL players, MMA fighters to increase your training and health and wellness through the metronome of music while increasing your rhythm, tempo, and pace. You can also find it in your web browser at getproelite.com. Once again, that's Pro Elite Training, getproelite.com. Increase your athleticism through the metronome of music to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. That's Pro Elite. So once again today, everyone, we are with Mike Gerken of the Custom Group. And I neglected to say that that's custom with a K, which makes it stand out because you'll remember that they've misspelled the word custom for their benefit. And that's custom with a K. And if you want to join today's conversation, you can at 859-291-2255. Or you can send us messaging in at info@drbaker.us. So we paused there for a moment, Mike, and we were talking about regulation. I know that one of my earlier opportunities doing international work, it was over in South America, was actually in Colombia. And as we were working on some gold mines over there and working to build out the mine titles, learning about the regulations was something that was really eye-opening to me. There were questions that I really didn't even know to ask because some of the laws and the customs were just so much different than what we have here, that it was a learning experience as we went. And ultimately, it was a successful project. We were able to satisfy what our patient needed, and we really grew out what it was that they requested as it relates to business treatment. What has that looked like for you all as you, I mean, you guys are dealing in multiple countries, you know, unlike many other businesses that may have just one location that they're working in. How long has that learning curve been for you all? And have you guys found that you're always under the gun of learning and it's something that's continuously happening?
We are always under the gun learning, and it's continuous. When we first went overseas, there wasn't anything out there like what you guys do for the business hospital to help these people learn and grow their businesses worldwide. So it was kind of honestly, a trial and error in some instances, and you know, you've got to learn from your mistakes and take it slow is what we always, you know, the tact we always took was just, let's slowly look at this, let's learn, let's figure it out, and not to just go in like a bull in a china shop and try to figure it out. We were always very methodical on how we did things, but it's still constant changes, especially, again, with government regulations and things where everybody's changing acts and different things it's nonstop.
Well, you know, when I look at that, you know, for me, it makes us smarter about what we're thinking about here. You know, we've had some shows, or at least on Doctor's Orders here, where we brought in experts regarding risk and what liabilities you may have. And those risks come in a host of ways. And a lot of time it's governmental, or it could be regulatory, or it could be something in the realm of cyber or just insurance. And what we found, you know, as a business hospital, is the more work that we did in other places, the smarter we became at what we should even pay attention to here in our own country, whether it existed or whether it's something that we're looking down, you know, down the pipe for the future. It makes you smarter. Have you guys run into any scenarios where you're like, whoa, why don't we do this back at home? Or why have we not considered this? Has there ever been moments like that that you experienced?
Absolutely. We're actually going through some things now where the European Union put a regulation in place 3 years ago, I guess. And December 31st of 2022, it goes into effect here in the States. So again, with having that international knowledge and forefront on these things, we've already started our process here 2-3 years ago to how do we get rid of this and make it like everybody else, because we know it's coming eventually.
Well, you know, we experienced the same thing with the pandemic. We had just opened our Filipino hospital, and we're really excited about it. And, you know, we were really learning what was going on in the Southeast Asia Pacific area, only for the pandemic to come down. And, you know, Ben Phillips, who's the number two in my company that runs all of our international affairs, he calls me. He says, hey, Doc, this thing is real, and it's going to hit the U.S. And when it hits the U.S., we need to behave in these ways. And so we altered our operation for about a week. And this was in late January to mid-February, where we said, well, heck, we're going to have to alter our operations in these ways because everyone else is going to have to alter their operations. And what happens when everything shuts down? Will we be in position to still service our patients? And so we started offering disaster relief services before our country shut down. And there were some people that took advantage of it immediately because I think they kind of felt something was coming, but they were uncertain. But others waited until April and May. But as a business model, it really positioned us well to gain new patients, to gain more traction and footprint in the work that we do. And so having that office overseas benefited us here domestically. So once again, I can identify with what you ran into in Europe. That gave you 3 extra years of preparation to make sure that what you execute here was well done. And so I know you had to be grateful for that opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. And same story that you told with your Filipino office. We've got an office just south of Milan, Italy. They shut down very early on in this whole thing. And we're like, whoa, what are we going to do if this comes here? And I'm like, guys, it's coming. If it's shutting Europe and Asia down, it's coming here. We've got to get on the forefront of this and start getting prepared. So, you know, I'd like to think that because of us having an international footprint, that we were able to see this early and hopefully protect ourselves some.
Absolutely. And I think what we're talking about as a business owner is expanding your reach of knowledge, expanding your thought process toward innovation, and really expanding your horizon from where your comfort lies to say, you know what? I want to make sure that my company is as sustainable as it could possibly be. And what we're not recommending or suggesting that you punt on your domestic affairs only to start chasing, you know, random opportunities in other places. What I am saying is you think about opportunities as they come along with a sober mentality, but also with an open mindset to say, how does this benefit us? One thing that I find unique, and I would imagine that our operations are might be polar opposites in this, is that I don't have a sales cycle, Mike. I don't go out looking for opportunity anywhere because the industry that I created as a hospital, I actually operate it where we kind of just sit here and whoever needs help, they come to the hospital. That was done intentionally. It's not an accidental thing, and I don't run my operation by luck. There are some things that we do that are strategic, but the point is I don't have a sales cycle or a target audience that I'm looking to pull in. So all of my work that I've done overseas, someone has come into the hospital and said, we need your presence here. Will you please set up and help us here? And then I say, yes, the doctor will come to you. I would imagine you're different than that, where you had to seek out where you were going to go or where you would set up, or at least I'm guessing that. Help me understand kind of the thought process as to how would you determine what's a new market versus what isn't one? Is it, I would say that it's not randomized, but what are some of the features that you're looking at when something isn't on the radar to when it actually is on the radar?
All right. Yeah, there's definitely different sales cycles within different countries. You know, our big sales cycle in the U.S. is typically around the holidays, election year, things where there's a lot of different things printed. Obviously, wrapping paper, Christmas, Halloween, all the decorations. and each country has different types of holidays and different types of sales cycle or different types of political things where print is still needed. That's definitely what we look for in a new opportunity is it going to be sustainable? Is that cycle going to come back, or is it a one hit? So that definitely plays into different regions of where we're going to target and where we're going to go.
Now, looking at that, you know, you went into South America first, but when you were in South America, was it the intent of, you know what, let's really see what Europe has to offer? And then it was, well, now that we're in Europe, let's see what Asia has to offer. Was it one of those, let's go continent by continent? Or did it have everything to do with the country themselves and what the country had to offer, your connectivity or reach? What went into some of that decision making?
Honestly, at that point, once we had gotten through the testing of the waters in Central and South America, we were kind of pulled into or pushed into, however you want to look at it, by some of our larger customers. Once they kind of found out or heard rumblings that, oh, you guys are international now. Okay, we've got plants in Europe. We've got plants in Asia. So it kind of went like gangbusters at the time of us trying to figure out what our best avenue of attack was. And then a lot of it also helped that these guys wanted us there. So it gave us a sounding board on what's the best way to do this, guys. We don't understand what you need, how we're going to do this. So we were actually fortunate in that realm that we were able to ride their coattails into these other countries.
Well, you know, you're talking about one aspect that's an actual metric of ours when we're treating a business, and it's called ADALE. ADALE is an acronym that we use for awareness, discovery, experience, and loyalty. And what I'm hearing out of what you're mentioning is the loyalty aspect, is that you all were able to expand, do really good work, and these larger clients were saying, look, we don't have any intentions on switching. We kind of need you more than ever, kind of like the song goes. And because of that, you know, you guys saw that opportunity and said, well, hey, we're not deviating from what we're doing. Actually, we're providing a better service for our clients. And so this helps them remain loyal even longer, which then helps solidify our viability over the long term. Is that right?
Absolutely. That is correct.
You know, and when you look at that, that's pretty much the best scenario that you can have. And so if you didn't have an international mindset, then you would actually be doing a disservice to some of those larger entities, forcing them to figure out how to diversify that solution.
Correct. Yeah, there's some of the, we wouldn't be as large as we were if we just stuck with domestic. And obviously taking the international out of it, if we just had those blinders on and said we're just going to service North America, find somebody else, we would have lost customers and businesses along the way.
Mm-hmm. And so with that, the expansion increased your sustainability. I know on my side, one thing that international expansion has done for us is that gave us more credibility to the work that we do here. I actually found it to be laughable. And in some instances, you know, we would quote, you know, the scriptures where Christ would say he wouldn't do miracles at home because they just kind of thought he was Joseph and Mary's son. So a prophet, you know, without honor in his own home. So for us, it was more, well, because we've run this solution in Australia, or we've done this remedy in the Democratic Republic of Congo, you now know that we're not just guessing at the work. We actually know what we're doing. We know how to set you up and make sure that your business is healthier. And because of that reality, it made our domestic partners, our domestic patients, more loyal. Have you seen any of that phenomenon here, or has it just been based on the quality of work? That's why you've been connected.
We've definitely seen the loyalty. Like you said, we're able to get them out of a predicament here in the U.S., and they have had the same issue in Asia or Central America or wherever, and word gets around through that company that, hey, Custom can get you out of this, call them. There's definitely some loyalty there.
Which is great news anytime that you're working. I mean, you think about some of your costs. The one thing that I think that is very important for any business owner to understand is what does it cost you to obtain a client, and in my case, a patient, and then what is the cost of losing that client or that patient? And in your instance, you actually want to not do a one rent job or a one service job. You actually want to be responsible for all of their needs for the foreseeable future as long as they have that need. And in that instance, loyalty becomes actually your best cost saver, no differently than, once again, if I use a football analogy or a sporting analogy, if you keep your players, it keeps you from overpaying to bring a free agent in. And in your instance, if you keep your clients, then you're actually saving money while also generating money, which increases your EBITDA and your bottom line all the way around. Is that right?
Correct. Absolutely correct.
You know, so you're looking at that metric saying, well, hey, the better that my international clients expand, heck, that's more expansion for us. And so having that mentality of understanding where is the business, and more particularly, where is my business? You know, we're not so much searching for random business. And you talked about that earlier with even your team members, which is let's stay focused on how we do work. It's not so much about chasing the business as you're making sure that you're preserving your business. And so those clients have become mainstays in your business. Now, if you know that every year we're maintaining, let's call it a 85% clip of loyalty, and you want to expand your business or you want to generate more revenue by 15%, now you know what you have to go out there and get now. Is that one way that you look at it with now that you're able to supplement your domestic work with international work?
That is definitely something that we keep a real close eye on, and especially coming out of the pandemic and the shortages and everything, trying to figure out, okay, who's going to be a strategic partner moving forward now that everybody's kind of getting back on even terms, who's going to stick with us and who's going to jump ship?
Well, it makes it easier. Well, it makes it easier for someone to jump ship if you are in position to take care of all their needs and they have to find someone else to supplement your work.
Correct.
Because now they can be seduced by someone else saying, well, why use Custom Group when the only thing that they're doing for you is X? We can provide you X, Y, and the Z, and we're right here with you. Well, that becomes attractive for them to say, well, heck, you know what, Mike, we're going to kind of go with ABC team over here because they can service all of our needs. Now you got to fight on your hands. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. And in our instance, it's kind of the opposite. You know, we're the high end where these guys don't always need the high end, but we don't know how to build a low end. So they come back and go, okay, well, yeah, we couldn't service you during the pandemic, and now we can sell it to you cheaper. And it's like, wait a minute, we got you through this. You love it, but you don't want to pay? Okay, go back to the low-end stuff that works 75% of the time.
Right. Well, you know, that's always a battle that we face. And, I mean, ironically enough, that's not a challenge that we don't see here in the U.S. I mean, I would make the argument that we're being shopped and compared to all the time here in the U.S. because the options in many cases can just be greater. You know, I'm headed to Zanzibar, Africa here on August 20th. And what I know about the area and the work that we're seeking to do down there in the real estate space is that our competition is lessened. And we know who the players are and we know how to navigate that reality. Whereas here in the U.S., you know, everyone has access to everything. Everyone's playing in the game and your competition is much stiffer. Have you found that, you know, in some of these areas that you guys have been able to either control a market or have a really nice size of market share or saturation in a particular market just because it may not be many other companies doing the work that you all do? Have you seen that to be a phenomenon in your area?
We have, absolutely. And primarily because, like you said, we've got the two different companies. You know, nobody else can offer the technologies from oil-based to energy curable to water-based like we can. We have water-based competitors, we have energy curable competitors, we have oil-based competitors, but we don't have a competitor that can do everything that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
So especially in some of those areas where we can help them by getting full containers or full truckloads into them as opposed to a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit over here, we have definitely seen that.
Which becomes a benefit for you all because now you can put your roots in an area and then you can work on plans to expand even in that area. And then now you can determine, well, what are we doing here? you know, quarter by quarter, year by year. But we also have this other book of business performing at such a rate over here that we know that we can count on that. So how do we make our plans for next year? All of that bodes well when we talk about sustainability and long-term success. You know, for anybody that wants to contact the custom group, maybe they need your services or your product lines, how do they get in contact with you? What's the best way?
Websites, www.customgroup.com. That's custom with a K. That's probably the easiest way to get in contact with us.
And so if someone is in services, once again, let's remind all the business owners, because you might become a solution for a business now saying, hey, we need to do something different with our product line. Walk everyone through what you guys do as a specialty, why they would call you, and then what is the ramification in the event that your work can supplement their needs.
All right. Yeah. We manufacture base products for printing inks as well as coatings and overprints and every chemistry from oil-based, water-based, LED, any of the energy curable sectors, for laminates, coatings, wood, paper, just about anything you can print on, we can help you do that.
See, when you're talking business to business, and a lot of times I make this clear amongst any business owners that I come across, is that I'm not a competitor to anyone almost. And the reason why I say that is that my job is to make sure that the business is healthy. So it is very important for me to know what it is that the business does. So therefore, when I run into a business that has a need, I can say, oh, my goodness, you guys need to call the custom group. They're going to go ahead and they're going to help you with that. And they're going to increase your visibility or your presence in this way. Well, there's a lot of time that business owners are sitting around searching for a solution. And because they're used to looking in the same places, they don't always know where to find those solutions. And so it's really important that when you hear about a product or you hear about a service that can change the trajectory of your company, then you need to pay attention to that. And I find that working overseas, a lot of times there are just certain solutions that just don't come to mind until you're overseas. And you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't know that they used this chemical for this, or I didn't know that they used this product for that. You know, I'll give you one great example in our limited time is that I was working with a gentleman from India, and he had a portfolio of base cleaners, but the base cleaners were all unusual to me. They were not the typical, you know, disinfectants and cleaners that I'm used to seeing. I mean, heck, we had Coverall on the show just the other day. Chris Taylor, who's the general manager of the Cincinnati region, was on, and we're talking about some of their base cleaners. The point is, we would have ignored these particular cleaners, but the cleaners that were being used in India had a significantly higher grade and was also remarkably safer than many of the cleaners that we use here every day. And they weren't even readily found in with our vendors and suppliers here. Point is, international work helped us see that. And so I'm just wondering, even in our limited time, do you run into that often, Mike, where you just see a product, you see a service, you see something, you say, oh my goodness, that is something that we need to bring home. Does that ever hit you, or do you miss that a lot based on the way that you have to operate?
No, we see that a lot.
You know, and so what makes that important, everyone, is that do not ignore international opportunity. Please have your mind open to international opportunity. Position your company to participate and interact internationally. Once again, we want to give a special thanks to Mike Gerken from the Custom Group and all the work that they do. Please contact them if you have a need. I am Dr. Baker. This is Doctor's Orders. And we thank you so very much for spending your time with us today. We look forward to speaking with you and having you guys follow us tomorrow on Trending Thursday. We have a wonderful show for you. But in the meantime, I hope your business has the best health.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.